Great, I mean, I only have one comment to Ravindranath's thing, is, so now you know one more devil which you have to fight, which is e-flows, and you know, now that you know a little more about e-flows, prepare yourself better how to fight that devil.
That's good. We've been fighting 60 years here in this part of country. We've been for them.
So just to complement to what Ravi has said, I mean, what you the way, whatever you are saying is, it's very common criticism against e-flow. And probably Neeraj has been, highlighting it in many forums, how it is a boat-edged sword, the e-flow tool is, how it can, counteract, used to justify them, I mean, this is not new, whatever you say, 6 years or something, this is almost 10 years old logic. The other thing you have said is free flow is inflow is also common, because even people like Ramaswamy Iyer and many other people have now declared that.
Who
are we? No. Others, I don't count myself in that. And if there are many important people, scholars, they have now very openly said that the entire natural flow of the river should be declared unconditional. Not anything less, not anything more.
No. I have an objection to it. The moment you say environmental flow, then there are units and parameters involved. So we cannot get into this politics. The moment you say we maintain environment, means units, mathematics and parameters are involved. So you will show with your thermometer, okay, fine, this is environmentally all right. Only one word, bus, free flow.
That's it. That's it. You call it free flow, other people call it natural flow.
Yes. Natural flow is much better.
That's it.
Yeah, it is better.
That's what people are referring to. That don't bring into the concept of free flow, environmental flow, let it be natural flow. So I'm just corroborating what you have said, and it's a very new kind of coming from very powerful people.
Just, I'd like to add something. Ravi is saying that we need free flow. Maybe for the river basins which doesn't have any dam at all, we may demand for a free flow. But what about the places where the dams have already built or have built?
We will demand for decommissioning.
We cannot make an omelette out of a boil.
Like Subansiri is halt. Similarly, yeah. There will be demand now.
Halt, but that halt will be always in the cost of the blood of the people of the land.
Yes, that will be there.
And to what extent you will save your blood? That's the most important thing. We need to understand that we need a moderate load out of you. See, we cannot simply keep on saving our blood for stopping the death.
Vidyut, you will have to understand one thing. You are shedding your blood to protect what? First, this basic question we have to understand. We will lose livelihood, means you will die. And if you don't fight also, you will die.
Yeah, but
and if you fight,
years,
you will die.
Like, what I want to say is that for 60 years, people of your generation has been fighting for it, but couldn't do anything.
No, Bidur, just
the problem is there.
Let me end on this. Rich people who are safe, they will not fight.
Okay.
People only fight when they understand in Lakhimpur and Dhemaji that everything will be swept away. That's why they have come out there.
Yeah, that's why what I feel is that scholarly things like what sir we have done, our massive work, no one can deny that work. But that thing has to go in the form of the law. If you incorporate that into the form of law, then NHPC or whatever, any dam making community can do anything. That's the most important thing.
One minute.
Let us come to Brahmaputra proper, the upper regions, I would say, not exactly Arunachal, the dams have come up right now.
But maybe 10 years earlier, 15 years earlier maybe, there were no dams out there. So now, Brahmaputra is highly dynamic. You have seen what has happened to Dibrugarh. Maybe 50 years earlier, it was a natural calamity. Because of an earthquake, the whole half of the town was taken away. And the river has also, you know, the Dibrugarh, that the confluence was here, and now it has gone about 50 kilometers upstream. So now my question is to, you know, Mr. Rabindranath, that what would you say that about displacement of people? That is about when people do it, it is different. But when the river does it, without doing anything, I mean, in a natural course of way. So how would you define that? About people being affected.
Yes.
People have been affected because in Dibrusoika, if you go there, you see that, you know, the people who are agrarians for ages, they have been, you know, the livelihood has been changed and they have been forced to come into fishery, rather. And the fishery has increased, the number of fishermen has increased because they have no other option because they are living with the river and they have to go back to the river. Illegal deforestation, timbering is prevalent out there. So what do you do about that? Because there's nothing.
See,
I mean, it's a totally natural process which has happened.
I can understand. The only thing is, see, naturally there has been lot of siltation and before 50 years where there were no developmental activity on the hills. But now it has enhanced without dams. See, dams are being built. One in Arunachal, that is Subansiri, and few in Kameng, one or two. It's not that 168 dams have been started. Now then, what is causing our displacement? This is again man-made problem. We have done massive and lot of lumbering. This is number one. Number two, now the kind of construction is going on 1700 running kilometer. We have people here. 1700 running kilometer four lane road is coming up. Now you see you are cutting those fragile hills and the whole sediment load is coming to your flood plains and immediate flood plain is Dibrugarh and Dhemaji and then Lakhimpur. So automatically what is happening that lot massive erosion is taking place.
Do you put the whole blame onto deforestation? That is my question.
No, the whole blame goes.
Would you bring in geomorphology as well?
Who brought the river's condition to this situation today? Human beings, the governments on the hills. Now, hill people also require development, so they are developing their road. You know why roads are being developed? It's only to connect the borders to fight with China. This is number one. Number two reason for road development and massive road building is not for a jhum cultivator to carry his paddy or vegetable. Four land road is not needed for that. Is needed for carrying your turbines and large machine and equipment to the dam site. So the massive wrong kind of developmental pattern which has taken place on the northeast, that has caused displacement of our people on the plains. It's not the natural happening. Natural course of happening, people have happily accepted before 30, 40 years. People of Dhemaji, you might have heard of Pankhua. Pankhua means Manu Ahisile Kheti Kori Bolo. Dhemaji te, Mati Mal Mal, Fertility Bolo, Sipsagar or Manu. The people from Sipsagar and Jorhat has come to Dhemaji for Pankhua. And there are many, many villages in Dhemaji where people came and settled for cultivation before 30 years. And now those villages are devastated. Can you imagine?
Well, once Assam dreamt about Dhemaji and Lakhimpur and Dibrugarh plains for as a rice ball, the same place is getting devastated because of man-made disaster. It's not natural. Naturally, there used to be problems. There will be floods. There will be natural landslides. That people can accept, nature can accept, nature can accommodate. But not this. This is a huge volume. You cannot imagine. You just travel from Along to Pasighat. And you see the fun. You just travel from Along to Dundi. And see the, you can ride now. You cannot drive. It's not motorable. Inkyong is cut out. Day before yesterday. Purvidina cut off. Kele cut off, I said. You can't drive, that's all. This much of mud on the road because of earth cutting. What will happen to that mud? Then mud will come to the Siang. And it will come and deposit in Diaghar. Diaghar or Gai River or many other rivers. And then it will go to Tongani area and my hundreds of villages, 100, 200 villages, 300 villages. It is ultimately going and hitting Mahatmara. Mahatmara breaches, it hits Dopakhana. Dopakhana gets flooded, it hits Majuli. Then 200 villages of Majuli. See the impact. One after another. So it's not that easy. And it is only happening because of rapid developmental action on the hill. If you dig the hills, you are destroying the plains. That's simple.
sorry, one minute. Now, yeah. Wait, what has been amazing is...
I do have some apprehensions about using e-flow for future projects. But I do see the value of e-flow methodology as for serious research on the past project. So I would go along with Neeraj. I think we should develop a very serious way of studying past projects through e-flow, because the future is uncertain in the sense at this stage when a methodology, when an approach is still new, the decision makers will not easily accept any study based on, meant for the future. But I think we need to develop a very serious methodology and do very serious research. And that's why I go back to my whole thinking of cost-benefit analysis, quantifying the environmental cost in spite of the apprehensions I too have, reservations I too have about putting money on biodiversity, etc. I think we have to develop a very serious methodology for the past, combining the environmental, social and economic issues, so, and cultural issues. Two, I tend to agree to some extent with Ravindranath when he says many of these, I may not put it in such strong terms, that what are known as natural disasters, most of them are human. Most of them. Today, I'm not speaking of the past. In the past, they were natural, and people have had adaptive mechanisms, and we have seen, I studied for example how agriculture in Assam is adapted to the July floods, and that's why Bihu is in January, though Assam depends on the southwestern monsoons. I think when it's natural, there is an adaptive mechanism, an ecosystem is created for that purpose. The problem is that today we have gone beyond that point of naturally. And I think most disasters today are human made. Now, how to deal with that? And that is where, again, I feel we need very serious study to see the link between human interventions in nature and the disasters. Again, most of these conclusions today are impressionistic. I think we need very serious studies to understand these issues. And so I wouldn't polarize what have we done for 60 years. Well, I'm much above 60, so that would hit me badly. So, no, I would rather go to say it's time we looked at the past with a future in view to question many of these dams, many of these projects, by trying to understand what the past has done.
Vimal, Parag, and Brinal have put up their hands, just for order.
Okay, one second.
Let me
write it down
a bit.
I first need to say.
And Ratnadeep
before. Vimal.
Parag. Brinal. And Ratnadeep.
Okay. Before I pass my call. Honestly, I think I can be happy and I could probably speak for the others. I'm happy to see actually the whole idea behind this was for us to be catalysts in a whole thinking of bringing all of you together so that you could view this from the lens of eFlows and come to what is happening and what should happen. As I said, we are not here to promote eFlows, we are not here to say, we are here to show what is happening out there. Whether it's right, wrong, how you want to use it, not use it, it's up to you. We are merely facilitators in the whole process. Okay. Having said that, before I say one question which was up, and now I would leave it to the House because it came from the House. Do we want to discuss the whole thing of who's going to monitor and evaluate should eFlows come up? Do we, because there are two, I mean, there's what Ravindra said, and a lot of the House seems to be with him on saying that no, we don't want to get into eFlows at all in the Northeast. Then if we don't want to get into it, which is absolutely fine, then should we just drop that, because I put that question in abeyance at the beginning, saying that we will come to this question of who will monitor and who will evaluate eFlows, then should we drop that as a question, or do we still want to discuss it? House raised it, House tell me, I'm here to go either way, whatever the House wants. But that's, then give it a thought if you want, and in the meantime you can go from speaker to speaker. So Vimal next.
Dear friends, actually I want a few lines. Actually, if you don't mind, how many of parents here have come for the particular dossier prepared by central government, inter-ministerial group report, IMG report? It is available on the internet. How many have seen? Yeah, February 11th. Yeah. Actually, this document is totally, I will say, draconian to Northeast, especially because, number one, it has MM ministries, secretaries also part of that particular group of the ministries, and it has one ministerial MOU that is should not hold up environmental clearance for the sake of cumulative study, number one. Number two, it has advanced hydroelectric projects. So if you don't have land for forestation in Arunachal Pradesh, go for Assam. And it is not available in Assam, go for Rajasthan. Like that. Number three, it has asked Ministry of Defense to simplify the rules of what is that called? Restricted area permit, number one, and another is inland permit. Number four, it has asked the hydrogen companies to look after that Sinai is building up dams in their site. So you prepare for yourself. That is why they asked them that you should prepare reservoir on the upper reach of the area. You see, don't build them here and make it under a reservoir at the PA, near the border. Even I have raised this question when the Minister of Jairam came and told other people too, but I asked this Naval Param to please go through the dossier again, please. Thank you.
Thank you. Param,
thanks a lot. See, I have few points on various things, but before that, I think that the House is getting judgmental somewhere. Judgmental saying that it is going this side or it is going this side. I think we have to look at the thing that before questioning what has happened 60 years, we also have to look at it when this question has been raised so high. Why this question has come in front? Yes, scholarly work was going on, but when this whole thing that
it is an issue,
it is an issue in such way that has come into picture. But basically what I am saying is that once Patra said they started talking about it in 2002 in Itanagar, in Itanagar University. Then A.C. Bhagwati sir said he wrote in 1982, but that didn't appear. But the point is that when it came, when the people came up and talked about it and protested about it, then the government tried to listen to it. So we can't see that only this work can do and activists or someone else can talk about it. I'm a student, I'm seeing the thing, that's what I'm talking about. But on the other hand, if we are talking about dams here, I just want to go one step earlier to this and talk about, because I work on embankments basically. And so seeing embankments, coming to roads, when first the British government started thinking about roads and thinking about embankments, it was first in 1927 when the flood hit. Well, I'm talking about flood because in Assam, if you see the flow of river expands, it expands with the flood and expands to the flood plain. So it was in 1927 when the government first thought that they should look into the problem of flood. Before that, flood was localized in nature, so it should happen. Here, the problem was that, as you said, roads are built, but roads are also seen as embankments and railways are also seen as embankments there. So that has to be taken into account, and that is why even in 1998, when flood has hit Assam, for 49% of the area, the highest damage has happened also to the road and transport department. That is one. Second thing, talking about erosion, how erosion has been seen all the way. You have talked about Dibrugarh, that Dibrugarh is facing erosion, but what about Romoria that was facing from long time? When Romoria came into existence, when Romoria's question was raised, only when in 1998, when the oil field was discovered, it was then when people started talking about it, fighting about it, it is only in 2007 when government has thought that there should be something to do about it. So you also have to see how the resources are, the government motivation behind it is also a question. Then, and Dibrugarh, the point is that Dibrugarh, from a very long time, Dibrugarh has been the interest of the ruling elite all the way. And it is because of the various kind of Dibrugarh, saving Dibrugarh was a political project, if we see it in the through the eyes of ruling elite at that point of time, which is the resource interest that is there in Romoria as well. Then, coming to the point of saying that why free flow and other things, like, you know, we should let the river flow free. Okay, talking about free flow, I have seen people talking, yes, we should let the river flow free. But on the other hand, people who are working in Jiyadwal, Dr. Koyalan Das, who has been working so long, Koyalan Das himself is skeptical about letting the river flow free. Because he himself says, the problem is, now you think about externalities. And when you talk externalities, there are two things. First thing is that the dams that have come upstream, Ranganadi is the first instance, Gai Nadi, where there is no dam, but there is also the case of earthen embankments, dams coming up, and that creating destruction in 2011, 15th of August. So, this externality we have to take into account when we talk about letting the river flow free. And I am talking specifically of embankments because embankments are the first things to stop the river flow spreading into the floodplain. So this is where we have to talk about, and I think if I am able to make some connection over here is that we have to see the thing from a perspective of not only of, you know, research has been done, this is done, so this has to be taken into account. We also have to see how the whole scenario is. I have seen some of the things, that's what I thought it is important to point out here, that let the House not go judgmental on things that what has been done, so this has been done, this is the case. We also have to see how people are trying to live with the whole thing. And in Dikrong, because Dikrong is very close to my place, now Dikrong are depending, the people of Dikrong, people who live on the side of Dikrong, they depend on the river flow. They basically, because they go to catch fish only 7 in the morning, from, you know, 3 in the morning, and they catch fish till 7, and then people started saying that thing. So, you know, things are also changing with the thing, and Dekrong is also changing. So the point is that how we see the whole process, let's talk about how things have come up and what can be done. And I think I agree with Neeraj at some point that we also have to see the free for the existing projects, but we can't deny that deep flow shouldn't be taken into account for new projects. It can't be free flow all the way.
I've got line. Pranav's next.
I'm sorry I came in late. I missed the entire presentation and half the debate, but I just couldn't resist it. That after Ravi managed to wake us all up, he's an old friend and also in some ways an adversary, but that's what makes us a deeper friend. I'd like to thank him for, like, you know, leveling and raising these a very fundamental question. It's like, you know, do we really take these studies or methodology seriously, or do we let them go? Because, you know, we have been scarred by these studies a lot. You know, we have been troubled because, you know, you'll always have, you know, the ongoing controversy with the Suman Singh has been raised really by studies. You know, we had an environmental impact assessment which was done in strange circumstances. Then an alternative was done. And questions were raised about that again. So I think this is a process that goes on. But nevertheless, given the fact that, you know, in my heart I would say I'd strongly go along with Ravi that, you know, we should reject the whole idea of there being any studies. But there's another part in my head which says that, you know, unfortunately, it is not the poor or the subalterns who take decisions in a country. As much as that is idealized democracy, and fortunately it is not an idealized ideal democracy. And decisions are taken by the powerful. And we have to challenge them at different levels. And one of them has got to be the medium of studies. So whether we actually agree to this particular method or not, we'll have to have a standard set of procedures in place, a mutually agreed procedures. Unfortunately, very often it happens that, you know, there's only one set of procedures which are imposed upon us. But is it possible? I'm also raising this question to the House as much as it's a thought, that can there be a set of procedures, mutually agreed, standardized procedures that everyone comes to, comes to an agreement that, well, this is what can be done in determining whether it has got some infrastructure or not. And I use the word infrastructure because it's not just dams, but it's also things like embankments. Because I myself have my own critique. Of course, you know, so much has changed in Assam. You know, since colonial times, it has been changing. It's changed, change has been particularly rapid in the last 10, 15 years. When you're seeing these caterpillars, like as if these Martian characters, the Martian characters have been coming and, you know, eating away our hills and mountains. This is really scary. But that, I mean, embankments have been equally bad. You have had, you know, places like Morigaon, people haven't been able to have a proper, you know, seasonal crop, and I mean the Kharif crop for that, for the last 15 years. On one hand, you have dam water release at the time when they shouldn't be releasing water, and then you have the embankment which restricts the water flow and, you know, disrupts the entire drainage. And I agree with him, I agree with you that it's not just embankments, but also roads and everything. They're basically obstructions of a drainage system, right? So the natural flooding that we used to have perhaps in the 50s, till the 50s, till the 60s, but, you know, Bhupen Hazarika has that famous song which got us into tears at one point in time. I don't know if the young generation really knows that, but we people who have one foot on the grave know about it. It really happened because of the dams coming up, of the embankments coming up.
Seriously,
right? I forget the name of the song.
At least
I'm getting.
Along
with the dam in his songs. Oh yeah, no, I'm talking about embankments also. But, you know, that's the kind of floods. I'm not alluding to embankments. I'm alluding to floods, essentially. The kind of floods that's different from, you know, water rising, reaching our courtyards, and going away to the very damaging sort, you know, where the flow of water, the rush of the water was tremendous. The velocity changed. Anyway, the point that I was trying to make essentially was that we have to, at some point of time, have some consensual mechanism of like determining whether dams are good or not, or any infrastructure is good.